This show is for the sales leader who knows they have a pivotal role in driving outstanding sales results. Getting hired or promoted to manage a sales team is a big accomplishment, but you know you have to work hard to become a great sales leader. You are listening to the Divine Comedy of Sales podcast. Here's your host, coach, and advisor to elite sales leaders from around the world, Matt McDarby.
Hello and welcome to the Divine Comedy of Sales podcast. I'm Matt McDarby, veteran seller, leader, coach, and advisor to elite sales leaders all over the world. I'm so excited to have you listening. In our latest season of interview episodes, I'm going to be asking some of the same questions about lessons learned, some of the great challenges that the leaders I'm interviewing have overcome, who did they learn from? But there's one important question that I'm adding to the mix, and it's essentially, what are the most important parts of your system? And this is my way of bringing systems thinking, which has been a recurring theme of the last several episodes, into our conversations with highly effective and successful sales leaders. Why am I doing that? I'm doing that to help you clarify in your own mind, what are the key elements in your system? What does your sales leader's operating system look like? I'm really excited to have you listening in on these conversations. So I hope you love this season of interviews. Our very next guest is coming up right now. When I first met our next guest, he was a senior VP of sales at Iron Mountain. That was in 2009 or 2010, I think we surmised. Since then, he's served in sales and revenue leadership roles at WP Engine, Meta Communications. He serves on numerous boards. He's been a co-founder, and today he serves as executive vice president at UFCU, financial services institution based in Austin, Texas. Please welcome Chris Turnley to the show. Welcome, Chris, to the Divine Comedy of Sales.
Thanks, Matt. Excited to be here. Really fun. I love the topic that you've kind of picked. I love the kind of way you framed this this whole career of sales and this journey, because it is definitely that. So I look forward to the conversation.
Good. All right. I'm thrilled to have the audience listen. I've said this in some of the other interviews, like we've got about 25 minutes and we're going to try to nail what are the most important things that we think people can learn from your experience. And there's a lot of experience, right? So I'll just dive in and start asking some questions and see what we can gain here. So this season of interviews, talking a lot about systems thinking. And the reason I'm doing that is the best sales leaders that I've observed have a way of making sense of all the interconnected parts of the sales organization, a system, so to speak. So they know how to diagnose and tune and make that whole system work to deliver the desired outcome. You've been a very successful sales leader for a long time. So I presume you have a system of sorts. What are the most important parts of your system?
No, thank you. So it's a good conversation. When most sales leaders, not all, but most sales leaders actually start out as sales people at some point. And I think your best sales people create a system of taking an individual understanding a need, right? And then aligning their behavior and your behavior to get a desired repeatable outcome.
Okay.
In sales leadership, I think it's similar organizationally though, as you're now trying to align two groups, your sales organization to be focused and aligned on delivering a repeatable outcome. And then you actually have to align the entire organization as a sales organization to be able to support and amplify a repeatable outcome. Because again, if we're selling something that we don't deliver, you can still sell. It's just a lot harder. And so I think what I've found over time is there's some things you owe your team, and then there's some things you owe the organization. So for the system to work as a sales leader, it's actually more important that you elevate to the entire organization and you start to deliver. What does it take to align? What are the things that are not? And a lot of sales leaders want to go sell and then battle operations, right? And you'll hear all the attention. When actually operations is one of your best drivers to really understand how to be a repeatable, top, best-in-class organization. So if you want to lead that team. So that's one thing, is you've got to spend some time organizationally really understanding what is helping us deliver those outcomes repeatedly and what is not. The second is, it's about a repeatable outcome. A lot of people will get like one big sale, or an organization will get one big sale, and all you have is a dot on a graph, but they think they have a trend. And I'm like, no. One's a dot, two's a line. It takes at least three to make a trend, but three is a barely a trend, right? And so I think getting people to understand what really worked and what really didn't, and then what are those things that are the most, are hitting the organization, are aligned with the organizational goals, because we can deliver products that might have high revenue, low profit, right? And that might be the okay with where the goal of the organization is. And making those, and then there might be other times where the organization matures and they're like, well, actually, we now care about profit more than we care about revenue or customer acquisition. So understanding the season of that, and having worked in startups and having worked in for-profit organizations and having worked across those are different outcomes that you might be looking for. But a lot of sales leaders come in and say, well, I've got this sales, you know, methodology, and they don't adjust that methodology for the what the organization actually wants to deliver, right? And so that miss, what happens is you get a lot of people like, you'll hear this all the time, especially in small organizations. We blew the sales number out, but the organization failed. I'm like, well, yeah, you didn't really hit the goal, which is to actually make the organization successful. So instead of this competing, I think what I learned pretty early is that the second thing I learned pretty early is data has to have a seat at the table. A lot of salespeople who are good at sales, kind of a natural personality, intuition, they're able to read the room or read people pretty well. And I think your ability to develop that skill as well as augment it with data. So you might say, gosh, I had that whole deal. I worked everything perfectly. I'm like, did it close? You know, like at the end of the day, that has to matter. And not once, but over time, right? And so do I have that ability to do that over and over again? I think that those are the systems things that I think I look at, because your superpower as a sales leader or a revenue leader or a growth leader is really alignment. Alignment of your team to a process, alignment of your team to outcomes and clarity of goals, and then alignment of the organization to deliver support.
Coming back to what you were saying about data, there's something I infer. I want to ask you about it because I don't want to kind of put words into your mouth, but you said data has to have a place at the table. It sounds like this, like the thing that's jumping out at me is one of the critical skills to operate a system like the one you're describing would be you have to have all of those soft skills to be able to drive and achieve alignment, for sure. But it sounds like you also have to have pretty strong diagnostic skill, looking at the available data and information to make sense of what's going on in the current state.
I think that's it. It's a little bit of humbling yourself to making sure that what you're saying is actually true. Because again, we love in sales, we love anecdotals. And we also love winning awards and we love closing deals. So all those things are like natural draws. So you can create a real bias if you aren't actually judging it by there. So I think any sales leader is going to hit a spot where they have to begin to understand, depending on the industry, what those really important outputs are. Let's say you're going to run an organization above a couple, 20 salespeople. I don't know, I'm just making up a number.
Sure.
Then you better be able to read a financial statement and you better understand how your sales are impacting those and how you can frame that. Again, take that and then use your skills to frame that to a sales team that you might need to pivot, right? Because at some point you can't be like, well, they came and told us we need to do this, because as a sales leader, that ruins all your credibility, because it means you were fighting, but you lost. Instead of saying like, hey, looking at the financials, here's what we interpreted. So you have to have developed some partnerships in areas where you might not be strong early. And I think that was a big thing in my career, was able to just recognize, I love the intuitiveness of it, but if I didn't synthesize and start to create a system for myself, that I never make strategies in this without verifying it through the data or challenging myself through the data and challenging myself through partners that better know the finances than I do, then you can really end up in a spot where you feel really good about yourself, but you'll kind of float from career to career to career, because after one or two years, you just will not be delivering something long term.
Right. This is one of those moments in a conversation where I want to point something out to people listening.
Yeah.
Because you said something that no one else has said. None of the other people I've interviewed have made this connection between humility.
Yeah.
Humbling yourself, was how you said it.
Yeah.
How you put it. Humble yourself, and I'm paraphrasing, enough to want to sort of test and challenge what you believe by looking at data, working with partners internally. Am I really seeing what I'm seeing? So it sounds like, and the reason I'm stopping there for a moment is obviously the book, Divine Comedy of Sales. We talk about virtuous leadership. The first virtue we talk about is humility, the opposite of pridefulness. So for those listening, Chris isn't only talking about operationally, how do you do this? You lean on data, you find good partnerships, you help lead, especially with people in finance who can help you make sense of the numbers. But you first have to be humble enough to want to do that. So I hope you heard that, audience, right? How do we apply that to your job? We'll come back to that later when I do a quick summary at the end. Really good points. So you shared some really important lessons and things that inform your system. What's another, or maybe even the most important lesson that you've learned so far about leading a sales organization?
I think I was thinking about this. There's two things that kind of really stood out to me as I was going back and reflecting before this conversation. One is there's a bunch of paradoxes, and this whole point of being bold and humble is one of those paradoxes, right? Being stubborn, meaning like the goal is the goal, right? And once you lock in, it's like, listen, we're going to hit this thing. We're going to work harder if we need to work harder. We're going to work smarter when we need to work smarter. We're going to constantly build pipeline, right? Those are all those things. But you also then have to be amazingly flexible. So you're stubborn and flexible. You're humble and bold, right?
Sure.
And those things may not seem to matter, but you got to be bold enough to stand in front of your sales team and sell it to them, right? While humble enough to go make sure that everything's right. Or else you're just standing on shifting sand. Uh-huh. And then you have to have, you know, these kind of things. So there's a lot of paradoxes in there, and you have to be flexible to your style because one company may not be another. One industry may not be another. I've been really blessed to be able to look across, work across a lot of industries. Uh-huh. And you have to then come in and kind of dive in and say, I don't know any stand up. I've stood in front of this team when I started here. There's about 800 of us. And I said, I don't know anything. I don't know anything about running a financial institution. Y'all told me you know how to do that. Here's what I know how to do. And here's what you can expect from me in the first year while I learn this. And you can expect me to commit myself to learn. Uh-huh. So that kind of those paradoxes are big deal. The other one I think that really stood out for me is whether you're in sales for a little bit of time, sales leadership for a little bit of time, and then as you grow organizationally to gain more responsibilities, right? Which is I think a lot of sales leaders want to do is you have this personality, but you don't want to be seen as like a mile wide and an inch deep, right? You want to develop those skills. But what you hear people talk about is they talk about having a sales job, right? And versus a sales career. And they even a sales manager might be like, I've got this job as a sales manager. And I think even though that seems like a very small difference, I always looked at mine as a career. And the difference is, I'll give you an example. So if you were say you were cooking hamburgers at a fast food place, and that was your job, you would make sure the hamburgers are good. You'd do a good enough job not to get fired. You'd deliver the hamburgers well. You'd probably get better at it over time. But if you had a career goal of being a chef and you had that same fast food job, you would look at it way different. You would say, well, why do we cook it at this temperature? Why, you know, what happens if I smash the burger versus this? You might ask to be a little creative because you're like, hey, look, can I try a couple things after hours? You know, just since I've got all the equipment here, can I try some things and just see how it works? Because you're looking at that as a progressional step on a career. And I think too often, most people don't look at that. Even if they end up being in a whole other part of the career, there are skills you develop as a salesperson if you're intentional. And there's skills you develop as a sales leader if you're intentional that you can apply to any job you want, right? You'll be a CEO. I've been a president of a company. I've run operations in companies. And you take all these things you've learned and you can apply them really well because it actually develops you really well into those areas. So I think too many people limit themselves by looking at a sales career as going from job to job to job to job versus what am I developing, learning that I can apply to the next thing? And not just closing deals, but what did you do to move the business forward? And I think when people look back, they actually had more opportunity to do that than they thought they did. Those are the big things I think I've learned in my career.
No, that's a good one. I want to address those two really quickly, and then I'll keep going with my questions. But this is more than just like a turn of phrase,
right?
Job versus career. What you're talking about is sort of a mindset about my work.
Right.
If I see a path from where I am to where I want to be, then it becomes clearer to me how do I need to develop and how might I need to invest in myself to have the skills to do the next thing, right? The cook to chef analogy you used. In the background though, I also have to have a leader that's helps me to, if I don't even realize it myself, that helps me to see that career path.
Yeah.
Right. So if I work for Chris Turnley versus I work for somebody else, maybe I have a better shot at growing and developing simply because Chris helps me to see that there is a path. Would that be a fair?
I think it is. I mean, I grew up in a generation we read a lot of John Maxwell, right? And so and he's still kicking around doing his thing. And I love that guy and his passion for it. But one of the laws that he says that I've just found to be so true through my career is that law of the lid. And not enough sales leaders think that they actually are setting a lid for their team, you know, by being the best close. Well, hey, I'm helping them close more deals. I'm like, yeah, for the short term, you're helping yourself close more deals, right?
Yeah.
And so that law of the lid and development and not being willing to, you know, I've probably put, I think one of the things I'm most proud of is there's over 100 people who have worked directly for me who are now leading companies. And so I think about that all the time because I'm like, am I setting them up to do that well? And I would hope they would stand on my shoulders and do more than they could. So, you know, I really am inspired by most of their stories. And I think that's what gets me to there. So I think it's a fair statement, but it's not by accident. It comes by some humble beginnings and some life lessons that I've kind of learned along the way that you do not get there by yourself. And I think there's this, especially today with the world of social media, and you know, there's a lot of people out there proclaiming like how you go be successful. Uh-huh. And a lot of them are taking a lot of credit for stuff that'd be interesting to know more of the story and who really helped them along their journey. Cause I just don't let nobody gets there.
Yeah.
Themselves.
You need look no further than LinkedIn at the sales punditry. There's a lot of the, I did this, so you should, right? And I read those stories a lot. Often I'm like, is that really what happened? Or is there, right. There's got to be something behind it, right? So again, for the audience, quick note, there's some do's and don'ts here. Here's a don't. Don't put a lid on their development, yeah. Right? Don't. And how would that happen is if you're really not actively having dialogue with them about career paths and how they can get better, what they can achieve.
Or even continuing to develop yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of sales leaders get so grinded in the business, their business, they start working on themselves.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, what worked 3 years from now or 5 years from now, and you see this because of what you do, There's people pitching the same sales methodology, no adaptations 20 years later. And I'm like,
yeah.
So much is, now again, some of the fundamentals might be the exact same, but how you deliver that and what industries you deliver that in are completely different.
Yeah.
And so if you don't continue to look around, and I use this phrase all the time, because as you get old, I always tell my kids, like, I've earned most of these gray hairs, but they get some of them. But you look at that and say, over time, you got to stay modern, right? So I'm not trying to stay hip. I'm not out there, you know, trying to understand everything. But if you don't understand the technologies and how they shift the buyer's journey and things like that, if you don't stay modern, what are you teaching?
Yeah.
And you end up teaching something that used to work and realizing why it doesn't still work.
Right, right. Tuned in, right? Yeah. I think that's
a good phrase.
Driving great sales results is hard. Doing it consistently is even harder. There are so many obstacles that can prevent you from becoming the most effective sales leader you can be. Find practical advice you can apply right away by picking up your copy of Matt's book, The Divine Comedy of Sales, at www.divinecomedyofsales.com.
You know, you said something about the paradox of like being stubborn and mainly flexible, humble and bold. It reminds me of something I heard from another leader I interviewed a few months ago, Ken Napolitano. And he said one of the lessons, he's an old Bloomberg guy. Yeah. He grew up in the Bloomberg organization. And he had a leader who said, you have to be an and leader.
Yeah.
And it was very similar to what you're saying. It's like, I have to be humble and bold. It's not an either or. And that's one of the challenges. It's like striking a balance between. Okay, great. I love when I hear lessons that senior and executive level leaders have learned that sound very similar, particularly when they are from completely different walks of life, different industries, different roles. I'm like, hey, let's notice that, right? If that, it must be true.
Right.
Pressing on. This is a hard job, leading a sales organization. You must love it. Otherwise, you wouldn't keep doing it, I presume. What do you love most about leading a sales organization or leading people?
You know, so there's very few industries where the people who enter those, there's not that many barriers to it, right? And so people come to you from all different walks of life and all different backgrounds and all different education levels or experience. And there's no one person that is the person who makes that, who is the prototypical salesperson for an industry.
True.
There are multiple ways to get an outcome. And then you learn about these people's journey along the way. And I've just found for me, that's probably what attracts me. I love shaping the business. I love having an oversized impact. I'm a bit of a performer, right? So I love like that whole element of it. I love analyzing deals and markets. And I'm a total geek about that stuff. I'm up way too late at night. It's like, hey, did you notice this trend? And people are like, stop texting me.
Go to
like,
sleep.
Like they're blocking me on time. Like I love that stuff, but what motivates me is really the inspiring story of the people, right? So that you get to work with and you realize what they've overcome or what they're overcoming or what their dreams are. And I think stereotypical people like might think about, well, salespeople are trying to do this, trying to do this. But I'm like, yeah, but if you knew where they came from and how far they've come, it's really fascinating, because I think a lot of people who jump into this jumped into it kind of because that this was the way out. And that's not true for every industry. That's not, when I was running a enterprise software company, we were not taking people who had never sold anything, but we developed roles like sales development reps. So we could, because you wanted to grow your own over time, and you wanted to be able to teach them the way you wanted to teach them over a 10-year period and allow them a great place to grow into the salespeople that you thought you needed. But for the most part, it's understanding the industry. But I think that for me, like I love The Art of a Deal. There's so many good books on that kind of stuff. But yeah. I'm juiced by the people that I get to work with and the improvements you get to do. And then when you watch somebody do things that they've never done before, or achieve things they'd never done before, meaning that maybe they feel financially stable, they get married, or they start having kids, or they get into that house, and you're like, oh my gosh, like you were just a small part of that journey. But that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know how many of the people I've interviewed have said some version of that, but I'm going to venture it's probably more than half.
Yeah.
Have said, the thing I love most about this is seeing other people win, seeing underdogs achieve, seeing it being a small part of people's success. And I'm like, yeah, that's honestly the only reason. If I were to leave what I'm doing now, because I do interim and fractional sales leadership roles from time to time, but if I went and did this full time, that would be the only reason I would do it, would be to be a part of other people succeeding. Because that, I knowing how that feels, I love that too.
Yeah.
So it totally
I think
resonates.
It's what kept me grounded and in the game is what I kind of call it. Like, like I was telling somebody the other day, I'm like, I'm thinking about going back and getting another, you know, degree. And they're like, why? I'm like, because I want to be the best. I got about 15 more years. I think people will pay me to do this stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They might let me show up, but they'll be like, maybe even volunteer.
Time to wrap it up.
Right. But yeah, come on, let's move it aside. But I think like I'm inspired to be really good at that. And I think there is that whole thing about you know, maybe it's the same with a sports team, or like you go through stuff when you're working deals or you're building something, and you're all held accountable for an outcome, right? So I don't make too serious analogies about that, but there is this thing, like we all are aligned on this outcome. And so we're going to work for each other to do it. And I do think there's an amazing bonding experience that I've missed. Like I did a couple of years where I built a consultancy company. I loved it. Like we had great clients, we had great success, but I'm like, I'm going to just hand that off to somebody, because I miss being part of a team.
Yeah.
And there is an element. I get it. I love that piece of it.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. You're hitting me where I live, because I do have those moments where like my best days were on teams.
Yeah.
Right. Going back to my teenage years, but you get so much out of it. So, all right. Another question. Who has had the most influence on you and your work as a leader?
It's a great question. So I thought a lot about this. I'm going to go back. So one, I always give props to my dad, who married my mom when she was about five. Like without him, I wouldn't be anywhere. Uh-huh. I mean, just because he was a tough guy and taught me how to follow rules and do that. But the one who really impacted me most was my grandfather. And I'll try and make this story a little bit short, but
it's okay. Go.
Your impactful why stories. This is one of those. So my grandfather, when he came back from World War II, he worked in an old service station in Spokane, Washington. And, you know, they would come and they would change tires and oils and all this stuff. And so there was a guy who would come in once a year from a farm town outside of there. And he would come in and get his tires changed once a year. And so my grandfather worked there for a couple of years. And so the third year, the man came in and my grandfather had always served him. And he pulled my grandpa aside and said, hey, I want to start a fuel business where you know, it was coal and stuff like that around heating homes. And it's a delivery, you know, it's kind of a sales and service job, but I want to start this company here and I want you to lead. And he goes, you've always just served me well. You've taken care of me. You know, very personalized people. And I just thought about that. Like, what's the power if you just did your job well? Uh-huh. And what's the power of serving somebody? And that changed my whole life. My grandfather was a very successful business owner, changed his whole family dynamic. And then when he retired, sold the business at like age 60, he ended up buying the business out. He then went into commercial real estate because he just had so many relationships around the community. And I think anyone who knows me, my kids get so sick. We can't walk into a restaurant where they're like, oh my gosh, you talk to, you know, everyone. And I'm like, I think that part of it, like I am his grandson.
Yeah.
But I think about like that power working as a service station attendant to serve somebody who interacted with you once a year.
Yeah.
And that would change a whole family's life. right? And right. I think that's kind of the there's lots of people who have made me better at what I do. Most of the time, I'll just say this for the honest, most of the time it was people that I was not really happy to give, receive that feedback at the time, right?
Right.
So
right.
I just think like all feedback is a gift. That's the only thing I'll say right about it. Like if you're getting negative, positive, whatever, all feedback is a gift. So take it all in and realize what the person is trying to do. But my grandfather's like that guiding story is how I've kind of patterned how I think I would approach it. How it approaches career.
Look, I think we can all learn from, it's a simple story, but about the power, it's the power of serving, right?
Right.
And how, what kind of an impression can you make on others and how can that create paths? So no, it's awesome. I know there's probably a lot more to the story, but I think the way you've summarized it makes total sense for our conversation. I'm going to ask you one last question, Chris, in the hopes of if there's something else that's in your mind that we haven't pulled out yet, and it's kind of purposely open and somewhat vague. What else? What else do we need to know?
So when people think about sales leadership, I think you have to go back to what you're good at too. Like you are designed a certain way.
Uh-huh.
And whether you're coming in, I don't know the whole audience, but if they're coming into sales or they're leading or they're getting their first manager job, authenticity matters. And what I mean by that is you're going to try on a lot of different coats and you're going to have a lot of different managers and a lot of different leaders who are going to shape the culture in which you're working in before you're the one who shapes the culture you're working. And so you're going to learn a lot, but take it in and it's okay. Like it's okay to have a tough boss. It's okay to have a bad boss. It's okay to have a good, great culture. That's wonderful. Like enjoy that. And there's times you might be working in a bad culture and you need to figure out how you can work on this. But all of those, every single one of those is an opportunity for you to grow, thrive, learn. Then you, as you're leading, then you need to figure out how am I authentically going to do this, right? Because there's a lot of people I think that try and be someone they're not, or even are in a lot of ways coached to be someone they're not.
Uh-huh.
And it's just not going to last. And I think the whole idea of this as a career is you're designed to finish and finish well. And so, you know, I have a lot of friends who didn't align their lives to this because they were told like, you need to be taking people out and, you know, partying and taking clients out, and then you realize sure. like very few deals get done that way, but it's not bad. I'm not a values guy saying like you should never do that.
Right.
I am saying you need to make sure that aligns to your life. Cause if your marriage, you know, depending on where people are, starts falling apart, you probably not do so great. You know, like right. it will affect your career. If your
sure.
kids are, you know, you don't know their names anymore, right? Like so
yeah.
how do you align this for the long term? And then how do you live out your values? Right. So I'll give you an example. I don't really drink. And so that is not a values thing. That's not like someone should or shouldn't do that. At the same time, you got to figure out how to navigate that without making my decision their problem, right? Now just use that because it's a little personal, but it's a little bit transparent. Think about how many interactions as a sales leader you have at a bar or at a team dinner or at an awards ceremony. And how are you going to just live your life, be authentic and not change your values, but at the same time, not put it on somebody else, because then it becomes a weird interaction.
Yeah.
And there's thousands of those, right? Where you just have to make decisions about how am I going to exist in this? And I don't think we spend enough time on that because at the end of the day, you're judged by performance. And everyone who wants to say, well, they're a good person. Great. They might move you to customer service.
Yes.
But if you're going to sign up for sales leadership, there's a number. It doesn't matter what organization you're in, there is an expectation number. And if you miss it enough, you're not the leader driving that. So the last piece, I think, in the what else is you really have to understand that you can't define yourself by the goals, but you better align your team to hit the goals. And I think so often we don't make the changes that are necessary as goals change, buying cycles change. There's total industries now where people are selling things for thousands of dollars that don't require any salespeople. They just require someone influential. Think about gaming, stuff in the gaming world. No one really sells gaming stuff. There's just people who use it and other people who want to use those things. There was nothing when we were growing up that went for $1,000 that didn't involve a salesperson.
Right.
So I think that whole end of understanding that all those things are going to shift. So you better understand your skill set and how to keep staying after that. An understanding that even in your industry, it's going to shift, right? So things that people used to need a salesperson for, now they don't because it's self-serve. And then how do you move up and move along there? So what makes me the most, I don't know, probably like, I wish, like there's certain people I meet and I'm like, I wish you had worked for me because they had so much ability and talent, but they kind of, their career kind of peaked early. and that went down. The last thing I'll kind of land on, so probably droning on at this, is that we did this study one time, and I just thought it was an interesting study. And it's not scientific. We just did it with our own, like, salespeople that we had worked with. And there was a number of sales leaders, and we represented at some point about a couple thousand people. And we looked at who had gotten successful too early in their career. Meaning, if you had worked in, I'll give you an example. If you've worked in mortgage the last 3 or 4 years, or if you sold software in the late 90s, when everyone was buying Y2K, or you sold before the Great Recession, if you were in kind of the mortgage supplement, there's times where things are so easy, you don't ever learn the skills actually necessary to grind. And then what happens is the industry changes and a lot of people have to drop out of that industry because they kind of made too much too early. And so we started tracking what happened to all of those people who got bluebirds and who, you know, kind of their first year in and they just happened to hit a deal and they were all out of those industries within 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
They had just never acquired the skill set. So I think that the last thing I land on is this is a skill, and the skill may vary depending on what industry you're in and the tactics may vary. But if you aren't continually developing your team as a sales leader and you're not continually improving yourself as a sales leader, I think you end up putting your own expiration date on your career.
I think that's a great point to land on, because one of the themes of the show and the books is kind of what you just said, essentially. And I'm with you. I've seen plenty of people have success early, and maybe it's because they work for a big brand.
Right.
Right. Doors open for them. And then they go to work for a small company or a startup and they flounder for the exact reason you've said. They never had the chance, didn't have to build the skills. So why would that? In that environment, the only reason they would develop the skills is if they had a leader that helped them to understand how important it was to develop those skills for the future. If they didn't have that, then they're bounced, right? They're doing something else. Chris, I'm going to, in a moment, start kind of giving a quick summary for the audience. Try to pull out, there's a lot here. What are the top few things maybe I think they should think about applying? But before I do that, I want to say thank you for spending the time with us today. This was fantastic. I knew it would be. That's why I asked you to join.
Appreciate that.
I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, man. Have a great one. Appreciate what you're doing and moving us forward.
Thank you, Chris. I want to thank Chris Turnley for being a fantastic guest. He's done so much, right? He's had so much success as a senior leader, as a founder, as an advisor. So I'm going to take a shot at boiling a few of the key points he made down and then challenge you to think about how do you incorporate some of the things that he said. First, I'll sort of go out of order here because he told a great story about his grandfather and how he learned about the power of serving, that serving others ultimately was the key to his grandfather's success, and I suspect to Chris's. When we talked about what's in Chris's system, I asked him that question. Chris, you've been very successful for a long time. What are the key elements in your system? He talked about a couple of things that we haven't necessarily heard or haven't heard them as articulated in quite the same way. He said, first, if we think about as salespeople, we're trying to align ourselves with buyers. And as a sales leader, we need to continue sort of applying that skill, right? The ability to create alignment between all of the different elements of the organization. Examples he offered, working with operations, right, to successfully and repeatedly deliver the desired outcome. So bringing people and functions into alignment is really a critical part of his system. And he's developed the skills to do that and the experiences to do that over many years. The other thing that he said, I love how he put it. He said, data has to have a place at the table, meaning we have to be able to leverage data to make decisions. But he made a really important point. He said, you have to humble yourself enough to test your assumptions or test what you believe with data. There you go. Humility, one of the virtues that we talk about so much, right? How does that apply to diagnosing issues within your business? Should we be so bold as to think that we can make decisions about an entire sales organization without humbling ourselves a little bit and just looking at the data? Let's not make assumptions based on our limited observations and our past experiences. As Chris puts it, humble yourself enough to test with the data. When I talked to Chris about some of the big lessons he learned, he said something that I think we've heard. If I think about the conversation with Ken Napolitano many months ago, he talked about a key lesson he learned about being an and, A-N-D,
an end leader. And Chris described something similar. He talked about sort of the paradox of being two different things. He offered the example of being stubborn and also flexible, being humble and bold. The point was, sometimes you have to sort of find a balance between these apparently opposite things like stubbornness and flexibility, being inflexible and open, being also open to others' ideas, for example. He said, be your authentic self, learn from the environment and the culture, grow there, and learn, apply authentically, in so many words. So when you look at Chris's experience and all of the very different places he's had so much success, I think you have to pay really close attention to those key lessons. Be an and leader, like he and Ken say in different ways. But also, let's think about those elements of the system, creating alignment, an active approach to creating alignment between various functions, just not only between members of your team, but supporting functions like operations, customer success, etc. And humbling yourself enough to test what you believe to be true with the facts, with the data, even data that other people bring to you that might be in opposition to what you believe to be true. Be humble enough to consider it. So, fantastic guest. I'm so glad that Chris was able to join. And my challenge to you is to think about, how can I apply one of these key lessons that Chris talked about today? Or how can I take an aspect from his system and apply it to my role, whether I'm a chief sales officer or a frontline leader? In our next episode, I'm going to bring in an old colleague of mine who's got a really unique perspective on the psychology of selling and leading. I hope you will join us for that conversation. He's a very entertaining, smart guy, somebody I've known and trusted for a long time. So please do join us for that next episode. Until then, this is Matt McDarby, author and host of the Divine Comedy of Sales podcast. Thank you very much for joining. Bye-bye for now.